Part 2. Lucky Space. Chapter 1. He'd been on wherries down the overfloat, trucks and cargo eights a few times, and, once, a train over to Formal R to visit a cousin or some such. He'd been pretty young at the time. He barely remembered the cousin, let alone the train. He'd never been off the ground for more than a few seconds, never flown, not even in a lifter. He'd certainly never been on a starship. The guy, Zale still thought of Harlan Nail as the guy, even though he knew his name. It was kind of a comforting thing to cling on to. Told him the ship was called the Hinterlight. Meant nothing. Might as well have been called Your Mama is a Smiley Girl. Zale still hadn't heard of it. But he was sort of impressed, and funny excited. It was a starship, and it was all that word implied. Off dirt, the void, distant worlds, whose names he couldn't spell. The big deal, as far as Zale saw it, was that they were taking him, too. Where, he didn't care. Had to be better than the J-Stacks. His little, knucked-up life had just taken an interesting swing. It occurred to him to wonder why they were taking him. The chair had talked to him several times since he'd hooked up with the guy, said a few things that seemed to indicate that he thought Zale was special somehow. Well, that was fine. The chair was the big shot in this little gang, and if the chair thought Zale was special, it probably meant he was. Though he kind of wanted to know, special how? The chair's gang had been scaring the life out of him since he'd met them, but they were sort of cool too. He'd seen the guy do his thing, for a start. The guy was a piece of work. Then there was Kiss. She was as scary as the guy, but in a different way. Zale tended to look aside when Kiss glanced his way. Kara was nicer. She always asked if Zale was doing okay. She was sexy. Kiss was probably sexy too, in a blade-thin, dangerous sense, but her scariness got in the way. Kara was just nice. Simple as that. And she had these killer curves that made him feel tingly. Thonius was a freak, though. Unpleasant and sneery. Zale got the feeling Thonius didn't like him much. Well, that was fine. And also mutual. There was Mathewin, who was simply a surly bastard. He reminded Zale of the worst kind of moody. But Zale had to feel a little sorry when the flyer stopped to pick Thonius and Mathewin up. The bastard had been hurt bad. There was a lot of blood, and a spew-making smell of crispy flesh. Kara and the guy carried Mathewin into the rear compartment to patch him up. Zale sat in his seat as the flyer rose up out of the city. There were window ports, but he couldn't see much. He could feel it, though, in his stomach. A little up and down. So this was flying. It made him queasy. The other member of the gang sat down next to him. His name was Frauke, and there was something weird about him. Every time Zale got near him, his head started to hurt. And Frauke smoked all the time. "Something the matter?" Frauke said, exhaling low smoke through his nostrils. Zale shook his head. The smoke smelled pretty good, actually. It reminded Zale of the drink clubs in the stacks. It had been days now since he'd taken a hit of anything. He'd been really witchy-twitchy for a while. But he was better now. He wouldn't have said no to a flecked, just a little look, but he didn't crave one. He had the distinct feeling that the chair had done something to his head. Nothing bad, just eased it, cradled it, taken out the sting. The chair could do that. It wouldn't surprise Zale to find out that the chair could do anything. He really wanted to know what was inside that smooth, matte black form. He didn't even know what an Inquisitor was, not actually, although he knew that everyone he'd ever known got terrified at the mention of the word. The chair didn't seem all that terrifying to Zale, not like Kiss, or Mathewin, or the guy. The chair was more like what Zale imagined the God Emperor to be. Quiet, faceless, potent, benign. Or maybe that was just something else the chair was doing to his mind. Zale looked down the companionway towards the forward seats of the flyer's main compartments, and wondered about the others, the newcomers. One, haggard and blood-flecked, sat on his own, his chain-binders anchored to a seat restraint. Zale knew he was called Dubow and had witnessed the final moments of his apprehension in the Carnivora. That had been another first. Zale had never been to the big circus before. Zale wondered what Dubow had done. He certainly felt for him. With Kiss and Thonius and Mathewin around, Zale sure as hell wouldn't have wanted to be a prisoner here. Then there were the other three. They kept themselves apart from the Chairs gang. They were dressed in identical suits of fine-quality grey cloth, but they were far from identical themselves. One was very large, bigger than the guy even, his muscles stretching at the cut of his jacket. His skin was dark, though not as black as Mathewin's, and he had a little trimmed moustache line and clan-style piercings in his left eyebrow. His black hair was short and downy. There was something primitive about him, something coarse. He was very still. He reminded Zale of Picts he'd seen, Picts of huge lizards, sunbasking on rocks, stock still and blank for days at a time, jaws agape, waiting to explode into fury and eat something alive. The woman seemed to be in charge. Her name was Madsen. Zale had heard her introduced to Kara. She was white blonde and slender, with a hard, pinched face that would have been really pretty if it hadn't been so tight. She spoke to her two companions now and then in a low voice that no one could overhear. The other one, the stringy man, was more alarming. Zale had an impression of a balding, blonde creep, but for some reason, every time he looked at him, Zale saw nothing but a sort of blur, like the creep wasn't really there, or like he was twice, and the two-ness of him was making him appear distorted. Once, during the flight, when Zale was looking at the creep had turned and looked back at Zale, as if feeling his eyes on him. The creep's stare was like hot wires. It said, "Look someplace else, you little freak." Zale had looked away fast. He peered out of the window. The flyer shivered as it climbed. Zale suddenly saw spots of fire in the dark and cried out. "What the frig's the matter?" Frauke asked him, petulantly. Zale pointed. "Stars. They're stars. Haven't you ever seen stars before?" Another first. He'd expected some grand fanfare and ceremony. This was a starship, after all. But there was simply a thud and a scraping sound, and the flyer's hatch had opened to reveal another hatch, which had opened to display a dank, greasy metal corridor. And everyone had just got up and got out. Zale felt cheated. He'd wanted to see the starship and understand where he was going. This oily deck hall could have been the back stairs of Jay, anywhere. The chair slid past him. "Find our friend a cabin and make him comfortable." The guy nodded and turned back to Zale.
"Come here, boy. I've got to..."
"Find me a cabin and make me comfortable," Zale said.
The guy faltered.
"Yeah, that's right."
Zale was busy lifting his feet one at a time and putting them back down on the deck grill. The strange, fluid sensation made him smile.
"What?"
asked the guy.
"Weird," said Zale.
"AG,"
said the guy.
"What's that?"
"The ship's artificial gravity. You'll get used to it."
"What's gravity?"
A recording of sweeping orchestral music was being broadcast at high volume across the bridge of the Hinterlight. Somebody or other's Ninth Symphony, laden with strings, brass and kettle drums. It was one of the shipmistress's idiosyncrasies, a little ritual. She liked to break orbit with something appropriately stirring, blasting from the vox. Besides, she claimed, it helped the navigators compose the course.
"Down three," she said, as she saw me enter the bridge by the after hatch. The music muted appropriately.
"Thonius tells me we're off to Flint."
"To begin with," I replied, using the vox ponder. I did this out of respect. For some reason, she had always objected to me mind-speaking. It could be a long run, right up the lane to Lenk, if needs be.
Sinia Priest pouted.
"No bugger goes to Lenk anymore."
"Some buggers do. The sort I'm after," I hope to catch them before that. Certainly before they hit Lucky Space. She tilted back her head and laughed, then stopped, then looked at me with narrowed eyes.
You're joking.
It's been known, but not at the moment.
Shit,
she said, and turned away, and then said it again, with equal vehemence.
Shit. I am not, categorically not, going to take my darling into Lucky Space.
Sinia.
No. No way, Gideon. Flint's bad enough. It's only borderline Imperial these days. But Lucky Space, I am not taking the Hinterlite out of sub-territory, especially not there. There are pirates out there, dark kin, brigands, death worlds, rip worlds.
The people we're shadowing have a particular interest in rip worlds, I said.
Well, lucky them. They can enjoy them on their own.
She walked away from me, cussing my parentage, and leaned over the pilot console, resting her hands on the spoked brass wheel. I knew what this was about. Majescus. I'd enjoyed a fine working relationship with shipmistress Priest until Majescus. God Emperor, it still haunted me. I have never, will never, forget the desperate voices of Will Tallowhand, Elena Coy, and Nora Santjak as they crackled over the Vox in the moments before their doom. Nor have I forgotten the damage done to the Hinterlite. How many was it? 50? 60% of the crew? May the throne of terror keep the soul of Zygmunt Moloch burning in agony forever. Sometimes I wished that bastard was still alive so I could kill him all over again. But he was dead. Incinerated on Zenta Malhide. And my friends and allies were dead and gone also. And that was then, and this was now. Sinia had ramped the volume up to full again. The bridge space shook with symphonic pomp. Sinia! She pretended she hadn't heard. Sinia! She snapped round to glare at me.
Not to put too fine a point on it, I'm bloody unhappy about this.
Sinia!
Don't mind chat me. Talk like a regular human or get off my deck.
As you wish, I said, switching back to Vox Ponder.
Better, said Sinia Priest, and dimmed the music. Throne, Gideon. I'm afraid.
Afraid?
It'll happen again, won't it? Sooner or later. We'll meet a bastard tougher than us, and he'll hurt us bad.
Zygmunt Moloch was a genius psychotic. A cognitized schooled freak. An aberration. Yes, he hurt us. More than hurt us. But he's gone now. Get Harlan up here, and he'll relish telling you how he flamed Moloch's arse on Malahide. We're after safer game, Sinia. Crim smugglers who've hooked up with game agents. They scour the rip worlds and everything else out there for viable circus beasts. There's very little risk. Mistress Priest scowled at me.
That's what you said last time.
She turned back to the helm position and studied it for a while. The Hinterlite's bridge was surprisingly small for such a large vessel, essentially because it had been rebuilt in dry dock after the Majescus incident. 6 months' expensive reconstruction, courtesy of the Guild Mechanicus, who'd only agreed to touch a rogue trader because of the influence I'd brought to bear through the Ordo's Helican. A compact strategium well contained the actuality sphere. Behind it, a double hatch let into the ship mistress's ready room. Four of the strategium, a simple sloping bay, contained the helm stations and the navigator's socket. Bridge crew and servitors scurried round. Oliphant Twu of the Navis Nobilitae was already plugged into that socket, his lids shut, reading ghost stars on all three retinas.
"I have a course, mistress," he reported in a slow, lazy voice. "Flint. To orbit. 4 days.
Hold it ready, if you please, Navigator.
Priest looked at me. Sinia.
Don't you bloody Sinia me!
Sinia Priest exploded again.
Be at your beck and call, fine. Carry you and your band of killers around the known stars, fine. But this...
Sinia Priest was mistress of the Hinterlite, and my pilot. She was 284 years old, although she always gave her age as 27 and a bit. Clad in a gold suede body glove and red velvet robes, she was an imposing figure, womanly but robust, and just now becoming stocky and matronly. She had cropped bleached hair, heavy makeup shadow over her eyes, and favoured excessive dangling earrings. I always thought she could have passed as a tavern hostess or a smile girl madam, but for the tracery of fibre wire inlay that ran down the left side of her face. Lucky space! She spat out the words. Elman Hallstrom, Sinia's deputy and first officer, had wandered over to join us while we had been talking. Modestly built, with a genial heart-shaped face and slightly downturned, put-upon eyes, he was a Navy veteran, and always immaculate. His thinning black hair was oiled back fleet fashion, and he wore the formal uniform of Battlefleet Scarus, though every insignia, pip, and crest had been removed from it. Even the embossed buttons had been replaced by plain bone discs. I understood he'd been a captain once, though I knew nothing about the circumstances surrounding his exit from service. Sinia had engaged him, like so many of the crew, after Majeskus. "We are fit and running free," he reported. Hallstrom was precise and clipped when it came to duties, a legacy of his years in the fleet, but he was not beyond informality. I liked him. He could yarn a good tale and deliver a fine jest.
"Eustace Majoris Control has cleared us for system exit. Course is ready and held. Enginarium reports jump speed at your discretion."
Priest nodded. "I couldn't help but overhear," he added. "She's mentioned brigands, I take it." "She has," I said. There was a twitch of a smile on his small, rounded mouth. "Darkkin? Deathwelds? All noted, Mr. Hallstrom. The shipmistress has made all her objections abundantly clear. I will endeavour to make sure our voyage has to go no further than Flint." "Well, then, that's excellent." Hallstrom glanced at Sinia. "Mistress?" Priest glared at me again, and then walked away to the main throne in the centre of the bridge. There she sat down and oversaw final preparation for warp translation.
"A word, if I may,"
Hallstrom said to me. He leaned over as he spoke, as if my 360-degree audio receptors wouldn't catch his confidence somehow, as if craning for an ear to whisper into. The gesture touched me. "Of course." We left the bridge and proceeded down the midship's companionway. Hallstrom walked slowly by my side.
"I understand we have guests."
As first officer, it fell to Hallstrom to supervise matters of shipboard security. "We have. I've told them to make themselves available for induction interviews at your convenience. For now, they're restricted at my instruction to the quarters I've provided in my deck."
"Do you want them to remain restricted?"
"Not unduly. Not so that we appear rude. Standard prohibitions, I think. No access to the enginarium, the arsenal, or any private cabins. I feel it is up to you and the mistress to decide what rules you set for them."
"I see.
And though I will interview them, what can you tell me about them?"
"Not a great deal at this stage. They are agents of an official department known as the Ministry of Subsector Trade, and answer directly to the Lord Governor Subsector himself. They have influence and power. A mishandled situation could cause a rift between the Ordos and subsector government."
"We wouldn't want that," smiled Hallstrom.
"And might a situation arise that could result in mishandling?"
"It might," I replied. "One of them is a potent psyker. I suggest you have Frauke present when you interview him." Hallstrom was silent for a moment. We had almost reached the end of the long companionway. Ahead, it split into the through-deck corridors and the main dorsal elevator bank.
"Obviously," Hallstrom said.
Then, gently,
"I know only what you and the shipmistress care to tell me about your work on Eustace Majoris. But I know enough to understand that you deliberately conducted your operation on the planet clandestinely. As it was explained to me, you felt you could trust no one, not even the authorities."
"That's still the case, Mr. Hallstrom. I'm attempting to locate the source of a material that is undoubtedly warp-tainted. It is used as a drug, essentially. Recreational.
But it is no narcotic. It is heretical. To obtain it and smuggle it onto the subsector capital world and elsewhere, that requires friends in high places, I believe. So I tried to keep my business quiet. Unfortunately, fate decided otherwise.
So these guests are here under sufferance?
Quite so. They're here because it is diplomatic to cooperate with them, not because I trust them.
A buzzer sounded, and amber lamps began to flash along the length of the corridor. Hallstrom stepped back and took careful, experienced hold of the nearest handrail, and I cut my chair's lift and maglocked it down to the deck. There was a slight tremor. Then 20 seconds of vibration combined with a flickering time-lapse impairment to my vision. The rumble of the main drives grew louder. Then the buzzer stopped, and the lights ceased. We had passed the translation point. Now the hinterlight was traveling at something close to maximum velocity outside real space, traversing the treacherous oceans of the warp.
"I should return to my duties," said Hallstrom, releasing the handrail. "Thank you, Inquisitor, for your time and candor."
"Mr. Hallstrom," he paused and returned to me. "How long will I keep priest?" I asked. He closed his eyes and shook his head.
"I can't answer that, sir.
Only the shipmistress decides. It would not be out of turn for me to mention that she has complained to me many times about the risks involved in continuing to act as your contracted conveyor.
She's scared. That business 6 years ago. It's fair to say it destroyed her faith in you."
"I know," I said. The toneless Voxponder did nothing to convey the sadness in my words. "Sinia and the Hinterlight have been part of my operation for, well, it will be 30 years next spring. I can't bear the idea of sundering that arrangement or the idea of having to find another shipmaster to trust. But the last few years have been difficult.
She's spoken of breaking our contract."
He shook his head.
"Mistress Priest would never be so unprofessional. But her agreement with you and the Ordos is up for renewal on the anniversary. She has mentioned that it might be time for a change. Time to return to free trading. Perhaps in the Ophidian sub, where merchant business is said to be booming. Of course, she will miss the security of the Ordos stipend and retainer fees. But not the danger.
Not the danger, no, sir."
"I understand how you feel," I said, turning my chair towards the nearest elevator.
"Me, sir?
No, sir," he said. "The mistress has been hurt once, and perhaps has lost her nerve. I can sympathize, but a little run up into Lucky Space, hunting for heretics. That sounds rather exciting to me."
The cabin, badly lit and untidy, was pretty much the only place in the Imperium Harlan Nail thought of as home. In a long, bruising life, extended by juvenile treatments, Nail was just over 100 standard, but looked a robust late 30s. He had known a number of homes. Loki, cold, hard, unforgiving Loki, was his birth world, but he'd outstayed his welcome there pretty much the same day he decided to follow his brothers into the bounty-hunting business. Loki hadn't been home for a long time now. He'd wandered for some years, not so much in pursuit of work, but because pursuit was his work. Then he'd crossed paths with an inquisitor called Eisenhorn. As part of Eisenhorn's band, he'd had residence in a number of places, and remembered most fondly the ocean house of Thracian Primaris and Eisenhorn's estate, Spaten House, on Gudrun. Both of those were memories now, just as Eisenhorn himself was. No one had seen the Inquisitor since the affair on Ghoul back in the 1980s. Nail often wondered if Eisenhorn was dead. So many of them were from that time. Fischig, Amos, Tobias Maxilla, Elena Coy. That's what this life did. It killed you, sooner or later. Serve the Ordos of the Holy Inquisition, and eventually that duty got you dead. Nail pressed the hatch stud and closed the door behind him. He moved through the gloom and snapped on a few glow globes. A status monitor by the door showed a pulsing red light. They were warp-bound now. He'd felt the shudder. His cabin was quite small and situated on the end of a corridor. The shipmistress had bequeathed an entire deck to Ravenor and his entourage as their own private sovereign state. The Hinterlights crew never came here, except by invitation. It was even off-limits to the cleaning servitors, which probably explained why his room smelled of socks. To his left, in an alcove, an unmade bunk, surrounded by scattered clothes, data slates, and books. Various picked shots decorated the wall over the cot like a shrine. Most of them were faded, the emulsion peeling. In the main part of the room stood a small table and three chairs, a codifier terminal linked to the vessel's data system, and a row of recessed cupboards built in between the bulkheads. To his right was the sliding door into the head and the upright washroom. Nail dropped his kit bag on the floor, where it became one of many. The main area was littered with equipment packs, rolled-up body gloves, boots, pieces of armor, tools, and various weapons that he really should have returned to the arsenal. One of these days he was going to get up in the night for a piss and tread on a loaded hand cannon. Then he'd have to do some frigging explaining, and most likely go hunting for some missing toes. Nail wandered across to the bulkhead cupboards. He was limping. He ached. The free-for-all in the Carnivora had been less than fun. Reaching out to the cupboard latch, he noticed how skinned and raw his knuckles were. Grime black, caked in dried blood, the calloused skin torn. He needed a shower. The effort didn't appeal to him. He raised his left hand and held it out alongside his right. The missing finger seemed like a smack-in-the-mouth slur, an offensive lack. Ironic. That finger had once been his favourite insult. Now its very absence seemed obscene. All these friggin' years, he'd been shot and stabbed and left for dead, but he'd never lost a part of himself. It was like an omen. He'd never needed augmetics. He thought of Gregor Eisenhorn, replacing and supporting his battle-torn body bit by bit. Then, shit, he thought of Ravenna. Was this where it started? Was this the beginning of the end? First a finger, then what? An arm? A leg? A major organ? He liked that frigging finger. It had been on his top 10 list of favourite fingers. He poured himself a drink, Amasek, from a bottle in the cupboard. It took him a while to find a glass, and longer to decide that the glass didn't actually have to be clean. Sipping it, he reached out to press the activator stud of the player unit in the cupboard. Nothing happened. So that's what that finger had been for. He used an existing finger this time, and low-volume melodies flowed out into the cabin. He'd have to go and see Antrobus, get himself a new finger, augmetic, whatever, and... Nail paused. Antrobus. Ravenna's Medicae was 6 years dead. One of Moloch's victims at Majescus. The Hinterlight had a new Medicae now. Nail couldn't remember the fellow's name. He sat down at the table, looking for a space to put his drink down. A carapace armor unit occupied most of the tabletop. He'd been repairing it on the way to Eustace Majoris, and the job was unfinished. He pushed aside powered drivers and stinky pots of lube. The music was good. It was an old tile, one of his favourites. He hummed along, taking off his shoulder rig and disarming his pistol. He took off his boots. He was hungry. He was sleepy. He was pissed off. He was old. He was thinking about the guests as he walked over to the bulkhead cupboards for a refill. He didn't like it. Not at all. Didn't like them. Something about them. Probably no more than the fact that they were intruding into his work, into the Inquisitor's work. Kinski was dangerous. The other two, who knew? Nail reckoned he could take Ahenobarb out, if it came to it. Madsen, though. She was a blank page, and only the Inquisitor could handle Kinski. He heard a little noise outside his cabin door. Just a little noise. A glance reminded him he'd left the hatch unlocked. Nail put down his drink and picked up a sleek Transvasser 38 from under a pile of soiled clothes. Its tiny red telltale light showed it was loaded and armed. He walked towards the door, gun raised, and popped the stud. Zale, as good as fell, into the room.
"What the hell are you doing here?"
Nail asked.
"I got scared," the boy said.
A little Amasek calmed him down. The drink made him flushed and smiley. He lolled on the edge of Nail's bunk, holding the glass in both hands.
"What's this friggin' music?" he asked.
"It's friggin' bazookies playing friggin' reels from my friggin' homeworld," said Nail from his seat at the table. Zale thought about this.
"It's a bit plinky-plunky, innit?"
"Not to me."
"Just saying."
"Don't."
"Okay."
The boy swung his legs and looked around.
"When do we set off?" he asked.
Nail looked at him.
"We've been in transit for about 30 minutes already."
"Oh."
"Didn't you feel the translation?"
"No. What was that then?"
Nail sighed.
"The moment we went warp. A vibration? A shaking?"
"Oh, that's what it was. I thought..."
"Thought what?"
"Nothing."
"Thought what?"
Zale smiled a weak grin.
"I thought it was withdrawal. I've been getting witchy-twitchy now and then."
Nail snorted and knocked back some drink.
"Where are we going?"
Zale asked.
"Never you mind."
Zale pursed his lips and rocked back and forward. He looked around.
"You've got a lot of guns in here."
"Don't touch anything."
"Well, duh."
Nail frowned.
"And don't tell Ravenor I've got a lot of guns in here either. He'll only fret."
"Okay."
Zale took a sip from his glass and flopped back on the bunk, so he was looking upside down at the picks Nail had stuck on the wall there.
"Who's that?"
Nail looked across.
"That's Kara."
"She looks different."
"Her hair was black then. It was a few years ago."
"She's nice."
"Yeah, she is."
"Who's that?"
"That's Will. Will Tallowhand. And the girl is Alina Coy."
"They look nice."
"They were the best. Friends of mine."
"Are they on board?"
"No, Zale. They're dead."
"Oh."
His feet stopped swinging for a moment, but he still lay on his back and stared up at the Picts.
"My mama and papa are dead. And my granna. And Nove."
"Who's Nove?"
"My sister. She fell off a stack."
"I'm sorry about that."
"It wasn't your fault."
Zale pointed.
"Who's that?"
"Kara again."
"She looks so different each time."
Nail leaned back and smiled.
"That's Kara. But she's always Kara."
"Is she your girl?"
Nail laughed.
"I wish. Once, almost, and sort of. Kara and me are friends now."
"She's laughing a lot on that Pict. She looks pretty. Why is the bottom half of it folded up?"
Nail frowned and leaned forward to look at the Pict, then grinned and leaned back again into his seat.
"Because I knew one day I'd end up with a maybe teen boy in my cabin who'd ask all sorts of friggin' stupid questions and get overexcited at the sight of bare bosoms."
Zale sat up, maintaining his gaze on the Pict.
"Her bosoms were bare?"
"Yeah, they were."
Nail cupped his glass and looked down into it. He remembered the night. Fooling around, drinking, laughing, making love. Kara had brought the Pictor along. Nail wondered if she'd kept the pictures of him.
"I bet they're really nice,"
Zale whispered.
"I'm not even going to have this conversation,"
snarled Nail. There was a painfully long silence.
"Yeah. They really are,"
Nail admitted at last. They both started laughing, really laughing. Zale rocked back and forth, snorting and wheezing. God, Emperor, it was the best laugh Nail had found in a very long time.
"Understand me," said Nail, fighting his laughter. "You ever take that Pict down to look at the fold,
I'll kill you. That's fair, giggled Zale. You have lots of guns. Probably worth it, though.
Oh, yeah.
They burst out laughing again.
Who's that? He looks like a real hard nuck.
Who are you pointing to? Oh, yeah. That's Eisenhorn.
Zale looked at Nail.
And he is?
Dead, I think. My old boss. Another Inquisitor.
The chair's not your first boss, then?
Nail smiled. The chair. Funny. And obvious the kid would think that way.
No, I worked for Eisenhorn before.
He looks like a double hard bastard.
He was.
So how long have you worked for the chair?
Nail had to think about it. It had been a fluid thing.
He'd been in Eisenhorn's band for a long time, right up until the infamous mission to Ghoul, really. But by then, he'd also been working with Ravenna. When Eisenhorn disappeared, that arrangement had sort of become permanent.
Since the late 80s, pretty much. Nearly 15 years. Zale nodded.
Who's that?
That's Ravenna.
Zale sat up and peered hard at the Pict.
He's really handsome. Is that what he looks like now? Inside that chair?
No, Zale. It isn't.
What happened to him?
Thracian Primaris. Back in 38. The Triumph. A great procession of the great and good. The forces of the enemy struck and caused Well, it's been called the Atrocity. Ravenna was caught in a firestorm and burned really badly. He's been in that force chair ever since. His mind is the only thing left to him.
Zale considered this.
That's really bad, he said.
Yes, it is.
And who's that?
Nail leaned forward to see.
Now that's...
He stopped.
Damn, he said. I've forgotten to do something really important.
Zargeran. That was the new Medicae's name. Zargeran. Nail nodded to him as he swept Zale through the infirmary towards the cryostacks. The hatch opened. Cold air fumed out. There she lay, sleeping like she had done ever since 86.
Is she dead?
Zale asked.
No, she's not.
Alive?
Nail frowned.
Not that either.
She's very beautiful.
Yeah, she is. Look, every time I come back aboard, I make a point of saying hello to her. Maybe she can hear me, maybe not. She's been in this state for 15 years. She was Eisenhorn's most loyal ally, and a good friend to me, too.
What was her name? Zale wondered.
Elizabeth Beckwin. Elizabeth, hi. It's me. Harlan. Just come to say hello.
She's frozen,
Zale said.
Yeah. She's not dead or alive, just preserved here. Maintained in the cold hold of the Hinterlight for a decade and a half. Maybe she'll live again one day. Maybe she's dead. I like to think she can still hear us.
Zale leaned forward and pressed his hand against the armor-glass cover of the cryobin. His fingerprints remained as frost blooms.
Hello, lady, he said. My name is Zale.